Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw.
Yeah, baby, I like it raw.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Welcome in, everybody, to the WEEI Celtics podcast. I am your host, S. Barnaby Packard, joined by, always, by mainest man, Jared Michael Weiss. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great because we got the ODB biopic finally coming, the RZA, on Tuesday, announcing that it is in the works and it is going to be good.
It's going to be the best biopic of a rapper yet. We got the Straight Outta Compton. It was aight. It was aight.
We had Notorious.
It was aight. It was aight. But it wasn't no John Blaze. And that's what this ODB biopic is going to be. So in order to prepare you fully, mentally, to get you in the zone for what that's going to be like, we got to talk to Chris Forsberg.
We got to talk to the lead conductor of the Celtics hype train. On his way into North Station, he pulled over at the Brighton stop to talk to us via phone at the WEI studios. We'll go to Chris Choo Choo Forsberg of ESPN Boston.
What up, Chris?
Choo Choo.
All right, we bring in Chris Forsberg right now of ESPN.com. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hype train pulling in. What's going on, boys?
Riding on the hype train. We are doing wonderful. And
it's cold, man. It's cold there.
In the 30 miles of distance, you think there's a drastic change in temperature?
Like, I don't know, man. Sometimes Central Mass feels like Antarctica. We get like 10 more feet of snow than y'all, so I'm just wondering if it's like this Arctic breeze, this polar vortex flowing through Central Massachusetts is also flowing through your Brighton studios.
No, I'm wearing jorts right now in the Brighton studios. We're keeping it nice and classy here.
Well, that's required uniform when you come to the EEI studios. You got to show a lot of thigh, and that's why I fit in so well here.
Well, jorts and a koogie.
Jorts and a koogie is an outfit I've actually worn my junior year at our spring like festival. I'm pretty sure Sean Kingston was performing, and I was in jorts and a koogie, so I'm glad you brought that up.
That's the legendary Beaver Country Day High School Fest. I've heard about that one.
Oh, did I say high school? I meant college, but I digress. We've digressed too much. We're here to talk about sports, specifically ones involving round orange basketballs and the local squadron, the Boston Celtics. Chris, you go to all the games. Me and Jared go to about half the games. And right now the team is playing what we like to call in the biz, small ball. They've been doing that. They did that the second half of last year. They're quite successful. Do you think they can sustain that moving forward this season?
I think this crazy little small ball idea might catch on.
Ooh.
Gain some steam around the league. It is. I mean, I think we all saw this coming eventually, right? Like, it was so successful last year, and then it was probably the dominant storyline through much of the summer. Like, they had all these bigs, or well, you know, Amir and David Lee, and Brad's talking about going more traditional. And I think we're all sitting here thinking, well, you know, that wasn't what made you successful last year. How do you get away from what made you good? And so, probably took 35 games or whatever, but it also involved health. And once they got Marcus and Avery to stay healthy, and you know, you throw Isaiah in there and you got to get everybody minutes, it just made sense to start going small more. So I guess it was bound to happen eventually. It's nice to see that they're kind of embracing it again, because they just look like a different team when they do. I mean, their offense just flows better. It just seems like they play a better brand of basketball. Now, they're still obviously figuring it out how to, like, you know, get both ends to work, and their defense seems to have slipped a bit and going small, but, you know, I think you're fairly confident they'll get back to that, because that's sort of their backbone. But I guess I'm not surprised to see them go small. Maybe I'm more surprised that it took to the midway point to get there.
Well, the thing is, going small is supposed to make you a better three-point shooting team in theory. And I'm not really sure that it's working in reality. Up until that Dallas game, all the guards were basically shooting like complete garbage from three-point land in January until Avery Bradley hits four of them. But so far, the three-point shooting has been kind of like the biggest crux for this team.
Yeah, and they just what they need to do is figure out a way to get Olynyk on the floor for more than 24 minutes a night and let the big man fire away, because he's clearly their most consistent three-point threat. And, I mean, he's in the top 10 in the league now in three-point percentage? So clearly they gotta take advantage of that and find a way to get him on the floor more. Like, I think that's the biggest trouble that Brad's going to run into here is, you know, you got to sort of all – if you go small – now you've got more guards who can't shoot on the floor or who can't shoot consistently, and some of your better three-point shooter, at least, well, Olynyk, is now fighting for minutes with Amir and Sully to figure that out. So something's got to give a little bit there. But, you know, again, I guess that's not a bad problem to have if you can figure out the minute distribution. I think we all know that Avery's going to shoot better. Maybe he's getting himself out of the little post-injury funk here. Marcus eventually has to shoot better. Like, there's really no way he can get worse. And Isaiah, I mean, you know, he's just never been a great three-point shooter. But, like, I mean, he's a good three-point shooter. He's just a volume guy. So, I don't know. Like, I feel like their three-point shooting has to go up eventually.
How'd you not mention the kid E.T. in that long soliloquy on the three-point shooting?
What is he at, like 6.8% for the month of January? Or
I think he's down to 15 for the year, right around
there. Yeah, 15 for the year. Like, I don't know. I've seen people on Twitter suggest, like, a shock bracelet every time he started pulling up from three-point range. I don't know what the solution is there. Now, I give people with irrational confidence all the credit in the world, because I'm the type that'll sit there and think, I probably should be shooting this shot. E.T., like, he gets the first one to fall, and he's like, well, playing with house money from here, I'm just going to jack, like, five tonight and see what happens. I don't know. Like, he's had a rough stretch here. Like, I feel like he was very good for them through, especially during, while Marcus was out, and I feel like he is a very good, I don't know if you want to call him a third guard or whatever, when the Celtics need him in that role. And then when they're healthy and they play the small ball, I feel like his role gets a little bit muddier, and we go back to sort of what a lot of us were thinking over the summer with, well, you know, where does he fit into this team, and how does he, where does he find his shots and all that. And so I don't know. He's valuable. They've just got to figure out a better way. And they just got to figure out how to build an invisible force field so he does not stray.
Fair to Evan Turner, he doesn't take, like, ridiculous threes. Normally he's pretty open. He makes the right basketball play. Marcus Smart's shooting barely above him in percentage right now. So I just have to defend our boy E.T. right there.
Well, I mean,
yeah, no, and that's a fair point. Like, we should not jump all over E.T. without chastising Smart as well. I just feel like, you know, they both have to figure out a good balance. I mean, this goes back to, like, Boston's biggest problem, right? That a lot of the times the shot selection is the issue. It's not so much the offense is struggling. It's just they settle for shots. They settle for bad shots at times. They're just gonna find better shots and know who should be taking those. I think Brad's repeated that pretty consistently.
Well, so when it comes to guys like Turner, Olynyk, and Jarebko, and Solinger as well, they're usually getting the open threes, usually from the wings, and they're missing those ones, while mainly Isaiah and Marcus Smart are usually taking highly contested threes, and they're really high arching threes. They have a really low success rate. Avery Bradley, I'd say, is probably somewhere in the middle, but he's the shooting guard who's supposed to be taking six threes a game, so you're going to get those. But, I've contended the entire year that this team's problem is just that they miss, like, five to six open three-pointers a game, and if you take maybe two of those away, that's enough to make them a much better team.
Yeah. Like, what was great about Smart last night was that instead of shooting those threes, he said, hey, I'm a big guard, I'm going to go post somebody up, and I'd like to see the Celtics do that more often. Just, you know, obviously going small is gonna naturally force you to shoot more from the perimeter, but there are times when they're gonna have mismatches, and just want to see them kind of balance it, especially in the second half when they. I guess it wasn't so much last night. Last night in the second half they actually played the right way. It was like the first half, and when the shots aren't falling and they stop pressing and then they settle for bad looks, they're just gonna be able to snap themselves out of those funks quicker. You know, and that's when it goes back to finding the right shots for right people.
Another thing we saw Marcus do last night, which I was shocked to see, was he pulled up from mid-range. I think it was from the right elbow and actually made a shot, which is just not part of his game. But it kind of brings me to a larger question with Marcus Smart coming back and now that he's fully healthy, is he going to be the backup point guard? And do you kind of, if you were Brad Stevens, do you want him kind of running the offense, especially in pick and roll? And do you take the ball out of Evan Turner's hands, thus making him less effective? How do you kind of balance those two needs?
Exactly. And I think that's the problem they're running into right now, is now as they try, I think they've seen that Marcus has played well when he's had the ball in his hands. And, you know, especially when he first came back, I think he went, there was a stretch where he had like a 15-1 turnover to assist ratio. Assist turnover ratio. And that came down pretty quickly. Like, he had a couple real bad turnovers in a stretch. But the fact is, you know, he's not, obviously still not a prototypical point guard, but that he can run an offense and that he does help you out if you give him the ball and let him try to create. But then all of a sudden you're putting Evans, all of a sudden he's buried in the corner somewhere and it's not the guy you want in the corner. So that comes down to more of a roster issue and the fact that I don't think they anticipated having those two together on the second unit because you were anticipating having Isaiah off the bench. That's what the trade deadline will hopefully help figure out, and Brad will have to maybe shuffle things again a little bit more. But if you can get more of a knockdown wing, then, you know, I don't know. So that if you're Evan, you know, this is probably a little daunting because if they add another shooter, then his role is further diminished. But that being said, I think we know from the injuries and especially Smart's injury history that he's probably going to be needed at some point in that backup ball handler role. So it's always good to have them, but how you balance it all if they find shooting at the deadline is going to be an interesting thing for Brad Stevens to have to do again.
Okay, well, one thing that Brad hasn't really had to mess around with anymore is whether Jay Crowder's a starter. Jay has been pretty great for this team. A lot of people have even said he's their best player, kind of looking from the outside.
We just went 10 minutes without talking about Bay Crowder.
Which is a record on the podcast.
Let's get the bag.
But this is why we bring you onto the show, is because you have been the leader of the Bay train, or certainly at the front of the train, and you wrote a fantastic piece on Bay Crowder's assimilation into Boston. So, I mean, tell us more about the piece, first off.
Well, I just feel like that when he first got here, and I think the Celtics front office can play revisionist history if they want,
they were
high on Jay Crowder, but I don't think anyone thought, you know, hey, this guy will not only be our starting small forward, but we'll play at a level comparable to Kawhi, LeBron, Paul George. And, you know, like, I don't think they expected that. But, you know, among small forwards through the first half of this season, Jay is right there with, like, an all-star collection of talent. And I think it's Carmelo and, you know, there's just a lot of talent in there. And at least in real plus-minus and real plus-minus wins, he grades out really well. And I thought the number that was most interesting was that if you go by win shares, RPM win shares right now, he's the leader for the Celtics, and by a pretty comfortable margin even, over Isaiah. And it sort of goes into what you said. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there now who are looking at this team, and when you figure that a large portion of the Celtics' success has been based on having the number two defense and the defense that they play and all those turnovers that they generate, that Jay's two-way impact makes him maybe the most valuable player on this team. And now, you know, the counter to that, of course, is that the Celtics are so anemic offensively that they need Isaiah, and that if you pulled Isaiah off this team, they'd be in a lot worse position than necessarily if Jay was removed. But that shouldn't diminish what Jay has done, and he's been, I mean, just, I don't know. I don't know if I expected this either. I think last year it was unique because they shifted him to the four a lot in those small ball lineups, and it really worked well as a second unit, and that's obviously what carried them to that second half surge and into the playoffs. But this year, it feels like, you know, even when they go small with Jay on the floor, it's more like bringing Jarebko in to play that four role, and Jay has really just sort of stayed at the three. I haven't checked the NBA Wowie numbers yet, but I'd be interested because I feel like he's been almost primarily at the three, and that's an encouraging sign because I don't know if we knew he could sort of thrive just playing that pure three role. And, you know, the shooting numbers are up. His production has obviously skyrocketed with more minutes. It's a really encouraging thing that you've found potentially your starting wing here for the future. And again, if you start thinking, all right, well, you know, as well as him as Isaiah and Crowder have played, if they got another elite player and took a little bit of that stress off of them, it probably would only help them even more and allow them to flourish even more. So it's encouraging that the Celtics have seen the development so quickly from Crowder, especially after locking him up for 5 years and $35 million this summer.
So you would say Jay Crowder has improved, but is he the most improved in the NBA this year, Chris Forsberg?
And so, you know what? So it was funny. I saw someone tweet this like the other day that he was the obvious choice to be the second most improved. And I'm like, I'm racking my brain. Like, who else is like? Is there an obvious choice that I'm missing?
Yes, CJ McCollum for the Portland
Trailblazers. Yeah, okay.
That
makes sense, right? But still, like, I don't think you can compare the two of them. But like, I mean, CJ's not playing the sort of defense that Jay is playing. So. If you're looking at two-way impact, maybe I think there's definitely a case to be made that he's one of the most improved. And now, again, it goes back to the age-old argument. Is it just he's having the opportunity to blossom more, or is it the fact that he's taking his game to another level? I think it's a combination of both, because a lot of guys get more minutes and they don't necessarily take their game to another level. I just think that Jay has taken advantage of his situation. And, you know, to me, the biggest thing goes back to this. Like, the Celtics turnaround certainly got a huge spark and jump, and everything changed when Isaiah came. But even before that, you could see the sort of the wheels turning in the right direction. And that's because they swapped out Rondo for Jay. And it went from a guy who was really sort of, I don't know if... Like, Rondo clearly admitted he wasn't playing defense anymore. He was not the same player, obviously, especially coming off the injury. So they got one guy who was supremely more motivated to take advantage of the situation he was put into than the guy that was here. And this guy now sets the tone for, you know, what they want to be and the defensive DNA that Brad so desperately wants. And I just don't think that you can overlook that impact in sort of how the Celtics got moving back on the right track.
And the thing is, with guys like McCollum or Caldwell Pope, those guys were lottery picks 2 years ago that in their third year are getting major starter minutes. So their progression isn't really out of left field. It's kind of what you would hope their normal progression would be as those picks. While guys like Jay Crowder, who I'd probably say is somewhere in the middle between those kind of stories, and then guys like Will Barton, Ish Smith, and Evan Fournier, who literally were bouncing around the league and couldn't get any playing time at all, and now in major roles are stepping up huge. But Crowder is this guy that he made a big leap when he got here last year, and then this year has really become that well-rounded player. But he's the only guy that really strikes me as someone that has taken the leap beyond the expectation.
And what I'll take away from your example of guys that were high draft picks that thrived in their third year is that we should warm up the James Young hype train for the 2016-17 season.
All right, you brought it up. We got to talk about this hype train because we've been tweeting about it. You've been tweeting about it for the entire season. What have we seen, like 7 RJ Hunter appearances? Jordan Mickey has been on the court for 30 seconds and has the highest PER of anyone in the league. But when
you
is the hype,
that.
When is the hype train going to arrive? I've been at the station for weeks now. It's getting cold. I'm hungry.
Can I tell you the secret? Like, you don't want the hype train to arrive, because then you find out that the hype train might not be as much fun when it's at this level. Like, I think it's always great when young players who are not quite ready in their first seasons can go to the D League, get that confidence, can kind of get an idea of what it's going to take their games to the next level, and just build that confidence. Like, you know, even Avery Bradley, people forget, like, there was a stretch where, and I think it was his first year, he didn't play at all, and, you know, obviously went to the D League. I think that's when they were sending him to Utah or whatever back then, when I don't even know if Maine was around, maybe by his second year. And then he went up to Maine that second year. I think he got sent down. He didn't cut his hair, but he went up and he had a couple big games, and then he came back. And that, like, right after that is when he sort of elevated to Ray Allen's starting job. So it's important, and it can help you, because I think just mentally and physically, obviously, getting game reps is better than sitting on the bench the whole season. So I don't think – it's funny to me when people go nuts. You know, we saw it Monday. They recalled Jordan Mickey because of to get treatment in Waltham while, you know, because he twisted his ankle on Saturday. And people are assuming he's, like, on the jumbo jet down to Dallas to help to, like, rescue this team or whatever.
He's the best player in the D-League, Chris. Of course he can help this team.
Like, and I understand there's plenty of examples of guys like Whiteside who come in and just need, again, needed an opportunity and got minutes. I'm not saying that Jordan Mickey couldn't get thrust into the right situation. If the Celtics were in rebuild mode and could afford to give him a ton of minutes, it would probably benefit him to be at the NBA level and just learn on the fly and get thrown into to the mix. But I think right now, if you're telling me that Jordan Mickey's going to come in, they, like, Tyler Zeller and David Lee can't even get on the floor for this team, but the rookie second-round pick is going to go in there. No, let's enjoy the fact that he's getting good reps up in Maine, that it's probably going to bode well for the future. He'll get his opportunity. Maybe by the end of the season when the Celtics are closer, they're locking up a playoff berth, they can squeeze him into a couple games when the D-League season's over. But there's no need to rush this. The hype train moves at its own speed. And the hype train is going to get here. Just enjoy the ride.
By the way, we should not be putting Tyler Zeller and David Lee in the same group just because they're both getting DNP CDs. One guy can contribute while one guy is really struggling to contribute when he gets his opportunity.
I'm not going to say race is a factor, but race is a factor then. That's when, right, we group those two together. And I'm putting it out there. I'm being honest.
I'll buy it. Like, listen, that's why, you know what? Well, how many more games until to the All-Star break? 10, 12, something like that? Like, all these things will be alleviated, hopefully. Like, you would hope that if Danny Ainge can't find the big fish to hook at the deadline, then at least he makes this roster a little bit easier for Brad Stevens to navigate, and maybe you find an upgrade, whether it's a big man that can score or a wing that can shoot, just something that can give you a little bit of a boost at the deadline and maybe loosen things up a little bit so that you can get the occasional young player minutes in there. That would bode well for Boston. But at least I'll say this, like, as much as David Lee, you know, didn't really complain, but obviously said that he didn't like the situation, and then I thought it was weird that Brad threw him right back in. Well, you know, DNP's now for the last three, four games now, so, and not even more, like, he's embraced it at least. It seems like he's still doing dabbing it up on the sideline after made free throws and
still buying those Powerball tickets.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, he's at least, it seems like he's okay with the situation, and if you're a veteran, that's a good thing. I do feel terrible for Tyler Zeller.
Yeah, I was about to say that. He just sits there. He's a quiet guy. You don't know what emotions are stirring in his brain.
If any.
Ouch.
That is cold.
I don't mean to say that he's an empty vessel, that he's incredibly stoic.
He is. And I think the thing I feel bad about Tyler Zeller is I think he genuinely puts in the work. I think we saw last season that he, in the right situation, especially with the right point guard on the floor, can be a very productive player. And the fact that the Celtics need offense, he's probably sitting there thinking, you know, geez, what do I got to do to get a shot here? But then I feel bad for him because he goes a couple weeks without playing. They throw him in for a 5-7 minute burst, and, you know, some of those layups just don't roll home. But I like the way he's getting to the rim, or the way he's going about when he's on the floor. I feel bad that those shots don't fall and probably lead to more of an opportunity. You know, again, maybe, and I don't know. But now that they're going small, I guess there's no. I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news for Tyler Zeller. Things playing time doesn't look like it's coming anytime soon. But, you know, we say that, and then a week from now he's the starting center, and, you know, who knows.
Well, the thing is, Zeller is a guy that fits more with, like, a half-court, 1-5 high pick-and-roll kind of team, but the Celtics are really getting away from that, and they really only do it against teams that are big enough that they can slow them down. But yeah, they want to go with mostly motion offense, dribble handoff, stuff like that, and that's an area where Tyler Zeller just doesn't really fit in. So it seems like unless they get a different personnel after the trade deadline, there's not really a role, aside from a few spot games here or there, where Zeller actually fits with the team's game plan.
I'd like to see Marcus and Zeller just run a few pick and rolls just to see what would happen. Like, why not? You know,
but Tyler Zeller does have remarkably soft hands, and if he's playing routinely, we saw it last year, he has some nice touch around the basket. He was getting a lot of double-doubles. He had, like, the talent is there. That's why it's just so sad to see him kind of quietly on the bench watching his teammates kind of throw towels and torment Chris Mannix.
Maybe we should maybe we need to invent something for Tyler Zeller, like not so much a hype train. I mean, what's the saddest?
Seat of sadness, a glass case of emotion.
He can throw his ripoff pants on Mike Gorman or something like that during timeouts.
Just give him something to keep him going.
All right, Chris, you mentioned it before. The All-Star game is fast approaching, and kind of the biggest story around the Celtics regarding the All-Star team is Isaiah Thomas, and does he deserve to make it? Well, does he?
Yeah, so here's I think it'll honestly hinge. We'll find out tomorrow when they announce the final balloting for starters, and I think it'll ultimately hinge on whether Lowry was able to sneak past Kyrie Irving in the fan vote. Because Lowry gets in as a starter, then Kyrie's probably, because he missed so much time, not going to get voted in by the coaches. And then I think Isaiah's more likely. But if the flip happens and Irving makes it, then, you know, you're looking at, I mean, not only does Lowry deserve to go, but it's in Toronto. And, it's hard for me to imagine he won't get in. He's got Jimmy Butler. And, I mean, there's a lot of guards that are getting in, and Isaiah's kind of like, you know, does he catch one of those last wild card roles? And so I think he's sort of borderline. We'll see how much coaches around the league respect what Brad has to tell them, because I'm pretty sure Brad's been stumping for him, and if they're going to give the Celtics somebody, then, you know, you'd hope that Brad was calling him saying, hey, listen, I know I got two guys here. I know if you guys are looking to reward Jay Crowder too, but, you know, we're trying to get Isaiah in there, and let's see what happens. And it's gonna be close depending on the fan vote, but, you know, obviously I think he deserves it. I mean, again, 21.8 points, 6.6 assists. He's definitely put up the numbers. It bodes well historically for him to get in there. It's just going to come down to just, is there enough room in the with the East guards?
And especially the way that he's been dropping 30-point games left and right over the past few weeks. So he's really putting the team on his back during a time when they're struggling offensively. And you just see it. There'll be a lot of games where he kind of takes a backseat in the first half, and then he explodes for 15, 20 points in the second half. I mean, he's the guy that's been you can say Jay Crowder is the MVP of the team for his all-around play, but Isaiah is the guy that they don't really get anywhere without him. So I think a lot of coaches around the league look at Stevens and they think, well, we gotta get an all-star for him because of what he's doing, the way that this team plays. But if Lowry doesn't somehow surpass Irving, and we're going to find out Thursday evening, I believe, on Inside the NBA what happens there, it's hard to imagine Isaiah holding on to that wild card spot, because you know Lowry and DeRozan are both getting in, considering it's Toronto, and I think they pretty clearly deserve it. And then the question is, how many guys does Atlanta get? Because Atlanta's got a few bigs there that could be pushing for that last wild card spot.
It's tough, but you feel bad for Isaiah, because like in a normal year, maybe if there's not the Kyrie thing just really throws a curveball into the whole thing. And We'll see. You know, it's gonna come down to that, I think. And then otherwise, like you said, there's just so many guys for those wild card spots. And you know, when you think of John, we haven't mentioned John Wall. And you know, it fills up fast when you're making your fictional All Star roster.
All right, Chris, I just came up with a wacky theory I need you to evaluate.
Ooh, I love wacky theories.
Say Isaiah doesn't make the All-Star team.
Ooh.
Doesn't that motivate him, kind of put a larger chip on that 5'9" frame and make him play that much better in the second half of the season?
New theory. So Brad's calling all the coaches in the East and saying, hey, you know what? I'd vote for Jay Crowder. It's like, you know, because he wants to motivate Isaiah in the second half. I kind of like that conspiracy theory. It can certainly help. I don't know if Isaiah is necessarily the guy that needs any additional motivation. He seems to find inspiration in like someone looking at him sideways, and you know, it's always going to be something. He just assumes that it's because he's short, and I don't think he has any trouble with motivation. But the flip side to that is, then, you know, the next time he's matched up with the Toronto backcourt or John Wall, he's got a little extra something in his step. And, you know, I can see how that might be a positive for Boston if it doesn't happen.
I mean, Isaiah has like a bag of Doritos on his shoulder at all times. The guy just piles the pressure onto himself. I mean, he's taken shots, or I'd say indirect shots, at Jeremy Lin over the All-Star voting system, which I guess Kyrie Irving deserves that more so, just because Kyrie was the leading vote getter without even hitting the court yet. And I think Yao Ming is going to get voted in this year again. So good for Yao.
Special treat for the fans.
I think the problem is Boston doesn't have enough celebrity fans that people are going to RT to or Instagram those votes.
Yeah, how many retweets has Donnie Wahlberg gone on his hashtag NBA vote for Isaiah at this point? I think it's been Kelly Olynyk leading the charge for the most part there.
Well, I mean, Isaiah's two most like famous supporters have been Floyd Mayweather and Snoop Dogg. And but like, so even though they have something like 4 million Twitter followers between them, even if it gets 1,000 RTs, like, it doesn't amount to much. And I mean, listen, that's just the problem with the voting process overall. And I don't think Boston has ever really stumped too hard for its players. Although I guess I can't say that, because like, there was those times where Boston had four starters, and you know, but they kind of deserved it back then. It's just a matter of like, you know, it was going to come. I think we all knew going in it was going to come down to the coach's decision to get him in. And has Isaiah done enough? Hopefully he hasn't made Randy Whitman mad like they did, and maybe he'll actually get his vote.
And we should just get, yeah, I know Kim Kardashian, Justin Bieber, whoever else has a lot of Twitter followers. I know you're listening right now. I think a little Isaiah Thomas hashtag NBA vote might go a long way for a lot of people.
Didn't the voting close like today?
The voting closed? Man, you're ruining it. Like, we can't have the celebrities tweeting them now after the voting
closed. That
would
be adding more insult to Isaiah Thomas, thus creating a larger chip on his shoulder. So that's actually a great plan, Jared.
Okay, so last thing here, there's been a lot of scientific evaluation on the value of Kelly Olynyk's man bun and its mystic powers. I want you to put on your lab coat right now and tell us what is it about Kelly Olynyk's man bun, and has his flurry of scoring over the past week disproven that theory?
I was stung to hear Ryan Scalabrine suggest that he found there was no correlation between Kelly Olynyk's hair and his play.
Another climate denier.
Clearly, as a hair truther, I will tell you there is clearly a difference whether he has the man bun or the flow. And now he had one good game this week with the flow. And obviously, you know, all of a sudden people are going to say, oh, it doesn't matter. No, it does. The man bun, for whatever reason, it gets that hair off his shoulders. It gives him like a cleaner release or something, because the numbers don't lie. He's on the floor for four more minutes per game. He's averaging three more points per game. His shooting percentage goes up by 7%. There's something there. And so I don't know if Zarin needs to sit down with Kelly and be like, listen, you know, we've got data now through the entirety of your career. You need to stick with the man bun. And if you run out of elastics for any reason, you come tell me and we'll find a ball boy to get you some.
But it looked like he was wearing a pink or at least a light red scrunchie in the Mavericks game. So did he bring that himself, or was that an emergency situation?
He needs a sponsor for these scrunchies if he's going to get this much hair time.
Does Karmaloop have a scrunchie section to the website?
As the leading Kelly Olynyk hair authority in the league, I will tell you that the red scrunchie has been the go-to this season. And I don't know quite, there's a question to add to the list of when we talked to Kelly about his hair, like why the red. I don't know where that came from. Maybe it's a Gonzaga thing or a Team Canada thing. We'll get to the bottom of that, but he does prefer to go with that. Maybe just someone in the Celtics organization should get him some green ones, and you know.
What kind of red is that? Is that like a fuchsia? Is that a crimson? Maybe a coral?
I'm sure when we ask Kelly Olynyk, he's going to have some very good answers, some long, elaborate statements that really illuminate the situation.
He's going to go out there with the comment.
He's going to shoot it down so quick, it's going to be hilarious.
He won't even acknowledge the existence of the man bun.
He doesn't even have hair, according to him.
Really, I think it's a scraggly chin beard is where most of the kind of wrist hinge comes from. And being completely serious, he has I'd say the improvement in the consistency of his wrist hinge this year has been great. And this year, more than ever, he's really developed a kind of a tighter kind of like I'd say like a tighter jump where he kind of turns his hips, gets his feet set with a staggered uneven foot set, and then has a very light hop. While last year I thought like he tried to kind of elongate the jump shot. This year, especially when he's playing his best, he keeps his jump shot kind of compact and it has a low arch, and that's when he hits his three more consistently.
Yeah, whatever it is, just keep doing it. Like, and give him more minutes. Because, I mean, the plus-minus don't lie. I mean, he was, what, plus 27 yesterday, plus 26 in 24 minutes in a game you lost by five in overtime? Like, find a way to get him on the court more. And I know that's what they were probably trying to do a little bit with moving him into the starting line. Part of it also was the fact that, you know, they needed his shooting on the floor with Avery out. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I know we don't let numbers dictate everything, but the team plays really well when Kelly Olynyk is on the floor and has big minutes. Like, regardless of his hairstyle, they need to find a way to keep him on that court.
So then lastly, Amir Johnson keeps having these games where he only gets about 15 minutes, but it never seems like Kelly is getting more than 30 minutes. So what is with the big rotation? How does Brad make it so that Kelly gets out there more? Because they seem to be at their best when Kelly's out there and shooting well.
I don't know, because the problem is it comes back to consistency, and you just never know on a night-to-night basis whether Amir's ankle is going to feel good and he's out there grabbing 18 rebounds, or if it's going to be a night where he's just kind of like a step slow, or, you know, Sully, who knows, like, you need his rebounding, but there are nights when he just doesn't have it otherwise, and then Kelly, and there are nights when Kelly just does, for whatever reason, just defensively especially, just doesn't have it, and I don't know how else to put it. Like, you know, Kelly, as much as he gets ripped defensively, you know, I feel like the numbers bear out that he plays well when he's engaged, and for whatever reason has these nights where he's just not, and he seems to get dunked all over, and then all of a sudden Brad's pulling him because he can't keep him out there and never gets back out there. I just think if I'm Brad, I'm sitting there, I sit down with those three especially, and I say, listen, you know, we're going small, there's not enough minutes as it is. Like, if you want to play, show me some consistency and show it for a long stretch and don't lose it, because I need to decide on a 9-man rotation and I want to know how many minutes I can play you guys. If you guys want to know how many minutes you're playing, well, you know, it's open for competition here. Let's figure it out.
All right, Chris, I've got to end on the absurd Brad Stevens, Evan Turner question of the podcast.
Ooh.
So, would you rather see Evan Turner do 5 minutes of stand-up comedy or see Brad Stevens do 5 minutes of breakdancing in a Coogi sweater?
I was thought you were going to go, I mean, like, you could have just said Brad Stevens doing 5 minutes of comedy, because I think that would have been
great. Oh, he would kill. He would do some observational
yeah.
stuff.
I think it would be like, you know, Bob Saget, too, like, where everyone thought he was, like, squeaky clean on Full House, and then when you go see him do stand-up, it's, like, the dirtiest thing you've ever heard, and people were just, like, lose it. Like, Brad just totally going, like, Dice Clay on us or something.
Oh!
Victory, victory, duck! Oh! I think anything involved, no matter what the question is, as much as we love Evan, and no matter what he does, it's great and everything, the answer is Brad, because God, Twitter would melt down if you had him doing 5 seconds of breakdancing, let alone 5 minutes.
So sounds like I need to leave my Coogi sweater just in Brad's office and just see what happens.
You know, I think Twitter went down Tuesday morning, so there must have been a Brad Stevens breakdancing video out there for a few minutes.
They got to Toronto, and Brad just started, like, tearing it up on
Oh, when Brad's in Canada, you don't even know. He's
got that maple syrup in him. All right, Chris Forsberg, you can find him on the interwebs at ESPN.com and ESPN Boston. Where can we find you on the Twitters?
No, I don't know, but you don't get this kind of entertainment on any other podcast in Boston. So
damn right. What, Jay King? Yeah, you were there last game when I stole your seat in the media lunchroom. What'd you do about it? Nothing.
Well, this has been it for the Trainin' Jays podcast. This has been it for the WEI Celtics podcast. Chris Forsberg, the first repeat guest that we've had since
Woo!
I started co-hosting the show. The hype train never stops here. So thanks for bringing the hype train through the Brighton studios on the way to North Station. Awesome podcasting as always.
Thank you, guys. Right back at you. Thank you for doing what you do. You guys are great.
One last thing before we go here. I'm Jared Weiss, if you didn't know already. My brother, Jordan Weiss, passed away in 2003 on this very day when he was 9 years old from type 1 diabetes. So I always like to take today to just let everyone know about type 1 diabetes, juvenile diabetes, as it's also known, something that most people don't know about. It's something that happens from birth, and there are warning signs to try to avoid tragedies like what happened with my brother. We have a foundation, the Jordan Bennett Weiss Foundation. Go to jbwfund.org to find warning signs there. Lots of information to also connect you to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, or JDRF. I really encourage you to make a donation to the JBW Fund or to the JDRF or the American Diabetes Association, ADA. They do a lot of incredible work with the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston, which is the world's leading research institute on diabetes. So please check out the warning signs. Spread the word, because I think through our organization, we've saved over 16 lives now of people whose lives were saved because their parents saw the warning signs. So you never know when it can happen to you. We thought he had a flu, and then 2 days later he passed away. So it really can happen suddenly. So please go to jbwfund.org today. All right, now let's get out of that and get to the exit here. So that was a great conversation with Christopher Choo Choo Forsberg. I want to thank him for coming onto the show. It's good to be back after a short layoff, but I was out in Brooklyn covering that game, and Sam is just fighting the good fight for justice correction all over the world. So for Samuel Barnaby Packard, I'm Jared Weiss. Sam, where can we find you on Twitter?
Update, folks. I am now at Sam Packard NBA because the higher ups, the man, wouldn't let a dude breathe, wouldn't let him speak his mind
or criticize Kirk Minahan with the WEI.
It wasn't
handle.
Kirk Minahan; it was Chris Curtis who put out a false report on his Twitter account, which I stand by. So, but I gave up and I changed my Twitter handle, which is now at Sam Packard NBA. So you can find me there for all random musings about all things Celtics and life.
And I'm a company guy, so it's still at @CLNS_JaredWeiss. I still tweet all sorts of crazy shit all the time, mostly politically charged. Vote for Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump is a monster. And that just about does it here on the Celtics podcast.
Thanks for listening, jerks.
I love you. Like you watched our trick. Disconnect. Ooh. Got you all in check. Your architect's getting money. Let me cash my check. Got your own check. Bust the rhymes up in the place with the OD. We really need new phones. T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month. New iPhone 15s? It's better over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch. Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.